Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Warriors HQ podcast. Dieter Kurtenbach in the East Bay, joined by Mark Medina down in the Lone Star State, deep in the heart of Texas. You're in San Antonio, right, Mark?
I am in San Antonio. I heard that they're playing a game Monday there, so I figured it'd probably be a good idea to show up there, right, so I can actually watch the game.
Well, you could have showed up on Monday. I mean, I don't think that would have hurt anybody's feelings if you didn't take in an extra day in San Antonio. There are certainly worse places around the NBA, but there are certainly better places, too. I just posted this on Twitter before we went on the air. The Warriors' circumstance, as it could currently play out, and we'll get into this here in a second, could allow for either the best or the worst travel situation. I don't think that there's going to be a medium ground between the two. But let's kind of go through the Western Conference here. The Warriors coming off of two extremely impressive games, in my estimation, without Kevin Durant, going into Houston and beating a full-strength Rockets team by two, though, frankly, I don't think that scoreline was quite indicative of that victory. The Warriors gave plenty back late. And then Saturday night, going into Oklahoma City and not just beating the Thunder, but I think really demoralizing them in a pretty effective manner. Russell Westbrook, the irascible Russell Westbrook, really was not pleased with anything that happened in that contest. And Paul George continues to struggle at times against the Golden State Warriors. And those, I think we could all agree, going into those games, they were big tests for the Warriors, for no other reason, perhaps, than the fact that those are probably the two biggest threats to the Warriors in the Western Conference. And that's something we've talked about all year. But with the playoffs now looming, I believe there are 15 games between now and the beginning of the playoffs. I just want to go through what seems to be a pretty locked-in Western Conference field, yeah, with the Sacramento Kings kind of falling out of contention here. Technically, they're still in it, but no, it's not happening this year for the Kings. And I like the Kings, but we're not going to entertain that notion. So the teams that we...
No way the Lakers can make that push.
I appreciate you getting the plug in early, Mark. You are a professional, if nothing else. They are 17 games back of first place. The Clippers in eighth place are 8 games back. You can do the math. That's a 9-game differential between the Clippers and the Lakers. Wow, it's quite incredible. And they lost to the Knicks today, therefore automatically eliminating them from any sort of postseason contention. I mean, even the Warriors, when they were half trying, still ran the Knicks off the court. So the teams that we have right now in the Western Conference, and we're just going to go one by one here and kind of share our thoughts and opinions as to how a matchup with them might go down, a matchup with the Golden State Warriors might go down, and just in general, what we think about it, if this team's really a contender or not, maybe not for the title or something like that, but just to make things interesting, to maybe give the Warriors more of a push, because I think we're all in agreement that the Warriors, even though they've played exceptional basketball, when they take their foot off the pedal, they're still down to clown a little bit, and they can get pushed by a team that comes right on a nightly basis. So the current 8 seed is those Los Angeles Clippers. They are 40-30 as we speak, 8 games back of the first place Warriors. Obviously, I think we're both rooting for the Clippers to hold on to that 8 seed. We like the Clippers. They seem like a fun bunch of guys, a very egalitarian 12-man deep thing. And Doc Rivers has done a fantastic job. But we're all looking forward to a trip to Los Angeles, a nice, easy first-round series compared to the ones that we've had here over the last couple of years. But, Mark, ultimately with the Clippers, do you see any circumstance where that's anything more than maybe a 5-game series?
No, I think that would be the least threatening playoff series because, you know, kind of their whole identity this year is the Clippers don't have stars, but they're really about strength and numbers and, you know, the whole having a deep rotation. Well, when you're in the playoffs, that advantage quickly goes out the window by default because you have shorter rotations. And a team like the Warriors, no offense to guys like Quinn Cook or Alphonso McKinney or Jonas Cherepko, but frankly, they're not going to get as much time as they're getting in the regular season. It's going to be all about the 5 All-Stars, Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston. And when you're a team that just doesn't have as much, no one has as much talent as the Warriors do, but when you're a team that doesn't have star power, eventually you're just not going to be able to hold your own. So I would say that would be like the most ideal first round matchup, both for the Warriors' sake and for our sake, because we both get to go to LA and they can enjoy the least, challenging playoff series. That would go to San Antonio second as, you know, the most challenging because, look, they're not the same Spurs as when, you know, Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker are, but they still have that institutional foundation with Pop. And I think there is something to be said. You lose a player like Kawhi Leonard, you're not in rebuilding mode. I think that that shows that they're a team that will still be competitive. They know how to maximize their role players. But remember last year, I mean, they had no problem beating the Spurs. They technically lost one game because the Warriors didn't show up, and the Spurs are a team that you have to respect. But I think the most challenging team in the first round, which wouldn't beat the Warriors, assuming no major injuries, but that could make it entertaining, challenging, and maybe make things where the next series, hey, maybe the Warriors are a little tired. The Utah Jazz, I mean, they got a lot of stars. They can shoot a lot of threes. They have a lot of depth. That road environment in Utah is no joke. And, you know, they've had a history in recent years of going down to the wire. And, you know, I don't want to make light of it, but, you know, you just never know with what happened with the Russell Westbrook incident. Like, exactly. You know, the Jazz have been taking proactive measures to get rid of that kind of behavior, but there's no way around it. There is a history of that going on. So you wonder, all those things in play could make it more than just a cakewalk through the first round for the Warriors.
Couldn't agree with you more on that. And those teams are all within a game of each other right now. The Spurs, it's interesting. Last year, of course, the Warriors beat the Spurs, and it's more or less the same team. Derek White actually has been a revelation for the Spurs as of late. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They're playing exceptional basketball, though I don't think against the hardest of schedules off the top of my head. But you mentioned when you lose Kawhi, you're going to obviously fall back, and that makes sense because Kawhi Leonard's one of the elite players in the league. But they didn't have Kawhi last year for the playoffs.
And, right. And,
they replaced him with DeMar DeRozan, who – listen, we can go into sort of the idiosyncratic argument over if DeMar DeRozan is an elite player in this league, but he certainly provides something. And the Spurs are hyper pragmatic in changing their system to best fit the skill sets of their players. Obviously, Pop is beyond compare when it comes to developing guys, especially guys that not a lot of people expected a lot from. But I think his pragmatism for veterans is really underrated as well. He might be the greatest coach of all time in any professional sport. He's up there with Belichick currently on my 1-2, and I think Belichick's the greatest to ever do it in football. So we don't need to get into that conversation. I do think that the Warriors can run them off the court. There's no question about that. But I would put out a bit of a warning to expect sort of the same thing last year. Now, again, if the Warriors are healthy, the San Antonio Spurs are not a thing. And we've seen that recently. The last time these two teams played, the Warriors ran them off the court. I'm fascinated to find out what happens on Monday night. Agree with you on the Clippers, though. I will say this. You mentioned guys like Quinn Cook, Jonas Jerebko, and Alphonso McKinney maybe not getting run. In a first-round series against the Clippers, I wouldn't actually be shocked if a guy like Quinn Cook keeps getting minutes. Mainly because of how well he's played over the last two games. I know that this is a different rotation because Kevin Durant has been out, but Kerr has kind of put Cook in there, not as necessarily a point guard, but just sort of as a wing, a spot-up shooter. And because you have Sean Livingston and Klay Thompson on the floor, they haven't really had to worry about his defense all that much because you can basically hide him on a wing who hangs out in the corner, whereas many teams have in the NBA. And Cook is going to knock down an open shot, and he can create a little bit off of the dribble. And I kind of like him in this second unit role as just a guy who can knock down shots. In the ilk of a Damian Lee, I don't think he's as good defensively as Damian Lee. A lot of that is just physical limitations. You can't get any taller. But I do think that there might be something to this. I'm fascinated to see how Kerr adapts the rotations when Kevin Durant comes back, because I think that the guy who would probably fall out of the two new rotation guys is Jordan Bell, who's been playing power forward minutes with the second unit. Maybe Kevin Durant takes those power forward minutes, as strange as that might sound, and they leave Quinn Cook in as a spot up shooter, because we all know Kevin and Quinn have a good relationship both on and off the court, a great relationship off the court, and I think they have a pretty nice rapport on the court as well. What are your thoughts generally on on kind of the bold rotations that have been happening as of recently. And do you think we should read into them anything more than, well, Kevin's out, so everything goes out the window, and when Kevin comes back, we'll change it all up again?
Yeah, I think that's a good point you made. I mean, the change rotations, as you alluded to for the listeners, is with Kevin being out, Steve has staggered the second quarter and fourth quarter bench rotation so that Draymond Green and DeMarcus Cousins are on the floor at the same time. The thought process is, hey, maybe by removing those guys that are not in each other's way, as they both have more of a role in their respective units, and specifically with DeMarcus, he's able to operate in that David West role that he had last year when he was with the Warriors. Mm-hmm. It is interesting because there's inevitably going to be a change because Kevin Durant, he's getting his starting spot back. I don't think we're breaking news there. And so that brings Andre Iguodala off the bench. So by default, it's going to be different. But I think philosophically, there's been more and more of a push on the team to try to make DeMarcus feel more comfortable, where they're featuring him in roles that show more of what he can do as opposed to what he can't do. And so it sounds like there's been more of a shift for him to be a really good passer with the starting group and to set him up as a facilitator and a post player with the bench unit. So I think from that vein, Steve wants to stick with that. But as far as combinations go, I think that that's going to be totally fluid because that's what Steve Kerr's MO always is in regards to how he handles the bench.
Very valid point. And I don't think that we're necessarily going to get a good read on it here in the next two games with this. It's a wicked back-to-back. San Antonio and Minnesota is downright punishment from the league office. I don't know how you're going to do it. I mean, these guys at least get to fly private overnight.
It's a 5 a.m. flight and I'll just sleep the whole time. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we hopefully there's some clarity soon, but as of now, Steve Kerr said he expects Kevin Durant to play against the Spurs, but he left it open-ended. What are they going to do with DeMarcus? This is another back-to-back. He so far sat one of the games in the back-to-back, and it's not clear if he will ever play in any of these. And the fact that he had a sore right ankle toward the end of the game Saturday,
right?
You know, Steve Kerr said it's a tweak, it's not serious, but maybe that only gives them more reason to exercise the cautious side. So yeah, that would be interesting because of the back-to-back. If DeMarcus misses one of those, or possibly, you know, Andre Iguodala, Shaw Livingston, Steph Curry hasn't had a rest day either. That would obviously create a bunch more of all these new combinations that that Steve Kerr can play with as one of these last remaining regular season games.
Will be really interesting to see how that goes down, because again, as much as these last two games have seemed like positive referendums that certainly outweigh the Warriors and that letdown game against the Suns, we've now seen three out of the last four games this team bring it. And again, when they bring it, they're head and shoulders above the rest. There are still pieces to this puzzle that haven't been completely placed, and there are still questions that need to be answered, not necessarily if they can do it, more how they'll do it. It's more of a methodology question than anything else. And you're just running out of opportunities to maybe see that happen. Maybe the Warriors are pleased with that. Maybe they know deep down how this is all going to pan out, and they don't want to give the game away too early. I doubt that's the case, but you know, they've done stuff like that before. I know they hold stuff back from the playbook in the regular season only to bust it out in the postseason. Maybe this is something equivalent to that, but it will be interesting. There will be a lot of hints, a lot of breadcrumbs over the next couple of weeks, because at some point you do need to kind of We're dealing with the end of baseball spring training right now. At some point, you have to put your opening day lineup on the field and see if it looks any good. And I am interested to see how that goes for there. Let's go now to a hypothetical second round, because I think we're all in cahoots. The Jazz could maybe push it 5 or 6. Rudy Gobert is that good, but the Clippers and the Spurs don't pose much of a threat. That said, this 5-4-3 situation, the Rockets at 3, the Trailblazers at 4, and the Oklahoma City Thunder at 5, maybe they don't pose as much of a threat as we thought they did on Tuesday, but they're still really good basketball teams. And in a 7-game series, again, if the Warriors don't come right, these teams could take advantage. right now, my ranking of those teams might have the Blazers on top, because the Blazers and the Warriors always seem to have really fun, competitive games where they get up and down. The playoffs are an entirely different environment. Anyone who watches the Blazers knows that the playoffs are a dramatically different environment for that team that hasn't won a playoff series in a really long time. Let's put it that way. I don't know the exact year. I'm running it back in my head, and I'm having a hard time remembering. It might have been the Scottie Pippen Jailblazers team. Steve Kerr might have been on that team. But the Blazers, CJ McCollum is out for a bit, but his knee injury, I do not know the part of the body that he injured. It was a populus or something. I'm pretty sure that's an architecture firm, but apparently it's not going to keep him out for the rest of the season. He took a pretty nasty fall last night. But man, they got some spunk to them. I like Yusuf Nurkic a lot, especially as a boogie foil. Certainly not on the same level as a guy like Steven Adams of the Thunder, but he can if you slow the game down and you want to execute in the half court, Dame Lillard and Nurkic is a hell of a 1-2 punch, with McCollum just hanging out getting buckets. There's not a lot of rationality to this, but I do feel like after seeing the Rockets again and just understanding that while they are really good at what they do, the Warriors do understand the one kind of smoke they're going up against. And Kevon Looney and Stephen Curry were absolutely fantastic defensively against Houston the other night. The Warriors really let their foot off the accelerator there late, and I thought that they controlled that game more or less wire to wire. It didn't exactly strike fear into the heart of Warrior Nation. And then the Thunder, again, I mean, Russell Westbrook, if he makes shots, that's a different ball game. If Paul George makes shots, that's a different ball game. But I don't think it's a significantly different ball game, because one, Russell Westbrook doesn't make shots. And two, Paul George isn't exactly known as hyper elite postseason competitor, though I do think he gets probably a bad rap in that regard. The Thunder don't have enough shooting around those guys, though, to really make it an interesting series. They just don't have enough depth inside that top-heavy portion of their roster. You can't be playing some of these guys that they're playing, these no-name second-round dudes, and expect to be keeping up with the five all-star lineup. So of those three, I mean, I think most people will put the Rockets number one, but, man, I just have a hard time. One, I'm rooting for the Blazers because I would much rather fly to Portland, which is about 90 minutes away, than go back to the central time zone, even though the Houston hotel situation is out of this world great. Friends in Portland, it would be a fun playoff series. There'd be a nice vibe to it. It would feel very West Coast. And I like that kind of stuff. I like to feel those emotions. But am I maybe overstating it? Am I trying to will this into existence that the Blazers are of those three teams, the possibly the biggest threat out of it?
Dieter, I hate to say so, but yes, I think you are looking at this through what is best for me, and a Portland trip would be amazing. But
I know so many great places to eat. Come on.
Yes, they have such great coffee.
I don't drink coffee, but I can learn.
Why do you want to go to Portland?
because Portland in the spring is lovely. Yeah. Portland has some of the best food in the country.
It is a great city. I will agree with you on that.
And think about how fun that would be. Dame Lillard, the Oakland kid, he always brings it. I mean, you want to talk about finding extra gears. That would just be incredible. And these two teams, whenever they play, it just seems to be, pardon my French, but it's an S show. And in like a really good, entertaining way. It's like old ABA basketball all over again. And I don't think it would really go more than five or six games. It certainly wouldn't go. I don't think it would get to six games, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. But man, they'd be highly entertaining, all four or five of them.
Yeah. And so I'm going to separate Houston because, you know, as of now, they would, you know, the Nuggets and them would figure out presumably who's in the West Finals because of the seeding. Yeah. So I'm looking at Portland OKC as a second round matchup. I think you can't go wrong with either team, but I would give the edge to the Thunder for a few reasons here. No doubt both arenas have a great atmosphere, and it's a tough test for the Warriors, regardless of if it's an OKC or Portland. But you can pencil in Damian Lillard. He is going to get his numbers. No one can stop him. The whole Oakland connection is a whole other thing. He hit that game-winning three in his last regular season game in Oracle. And, you know, I know talking with him, you know, being the Oakland native, like, he's pretty upset that they're going to Chase Center because of all the implications of people in Oakland likely not being able to go to games anymore. Right. But if you look at the numbers, CJ McCollum is great, but the Warriors have been able to have him have inefficient scoring nights. So I think all you really need to worry about is Damian Lillard and no one else. And I think here with the Thunder, they have mixed success. They have a great handful of games of limiting Russell Westbrook and Paul George, sometimes at the same time, sometimes one, sometimes the other. But they're always due for big games. And then I think the thing that would tilt the scale for me, and I hate to like fall into this like sports writer story, but I think it's a real thing, is the whole Kevin Durant connection. Like, he's well past the whole, oh, coming back to OKC and his defense. He's played well in those environments, but I think in the context of the season, I'm wondering if that road atmosphere and the chippiness can kind of tie into and make things worse of that push-pull of, you know, should the Warriors be playing with ball movement and strength in numbers versus dumping the ball to KD? And I'm wondering, as productive as he will be, and you can pencil that in, will there be any feelings of him wanting to do too much to show something for whatever reason? And I'm wondering, maybe that can bite him at certain points.
It would be a much more emotionally charged series for sure, yeah, given the extreme levels of salt in Oklahoma City. If you need any indication of how emotionally charged the game might be, just watch Russell Westbrook just lose his mind for 48 minutes. I mean, him bodies, I don't know what the hell that was, like just ramming into Klay Thompson. I mean, it was petulance. But
underrated part of that is when he got into Klay because he was upset that, you know, Klay stopped him and he thought it was a foul.
It was a foul, to be fair.
It was a foul, but that doesn't mean you need to like hack back at him and then get a technical, which is his 16th, and now he gets a suspension. When that happened, Klay Thompson just started laughing at him repeatedly. And so did DeMarcus Cousins, which is hilarious because DeMarcus can get upset with officials. So if it was too much for DeMarcus, I think that's saying something.
I mean, I posted a video on Twitter about 2 o'clock on Sunday, just with four shots. The NBA did a great job of only having a limited amount of clips put out for everybody. But I just grabbed four because it was something I wrote down time and time again in my notes during that Thunder game, which is Klay's not even guarding him. Outside of 15 feet. They're daring him to shoot. And this is something I've been saying for months. I'm not the only one. This is certainly not a unique observation. But Russell, the biggest threat to the Oklahoma City Thunder has and always will be Russell Westbrook deciding that he's a good jump shooter on a given night. Because he isn't, and he won't be. And Draymond Green has a better mid-range percentage than Russell Westbrook, despite the fact that Russell Westbrook shoots 10 times more mid-range shots than Draymond Green. So that's what we're dealing with. Imagine if your offense was Draymond Green constantly shooting. And imagine how well that would go.
Against the Thunder, it was good. He was technically the most efficient three-point shooter out of the team when you compare it to Klay and Steph. So
it's factual.
On the Warriors, get the ball to Draymond in the corner at the top of the key and let him do his thing.
Just let my man cook. And then I'm glad that you mentioned the CJ McCollum not playing well against the Warriors. So this year, CJ McCollum on 78 possessions against Klay Thompson has 12 points. That's a significant downturn from where he usually is, shooting 30.8%. And only 1 of 5 from beyond the arc against Klay Thompson this year in 4 games. This is an easy lead in here. I don't necessarily, I've been kind of banging this drum for a few weeks now, if not a couple of months, that this needs to be the year, as there is no clear-cut favorites, that Klay Thompson needs to be part of the NBA's all-defensive team. If not the first team, then at least the second. And his performances over the last 2 games against Chris Paul, James Harden, Paul George, say that 2 times fast. And then obviously against Russell Westbrook last night, which we could argue if that was full body defense, given that he just let him shoot his way in the Thunder out of the game. He's just been exceptional over these last 2 games. He's really brought it. I thought he was incredible the last time when they played Denver. He's been really good since he's come back from that weird knee injury that he had. I'm not saying that it should be guaranteed. I know that this is a nice groundswell. I'm all for it, obviously, as somebody who's been kind of touting this as a fun subplot. But there are a lot of players sort of that same ilk. You got Marcus Smart. You got Drew Holiday. Chris Paul is going to get votes, even though he shouldn't, because he has been that kind of player before in the past, and he has played a certain amount of games. Defensive real plus minus hates Klay Thompson, and that is mainly an indictment on those second units that have been really quite poor at times for the Warriors earlier this year. But ultimately, I know that everybody on the Warriors has Klay's back because they know what kind of a lockdown number one defender he can be. And they have three championships to prove it. But what's your read right now on Klay Thompson all defense? Am I maybe putting the cart before the horse here, or is this something that feels real?
No, I mean, he should have been on a defensive team well before this. And I think the only thing that I could see precluding him from getting on it is just as a team throughout the season, they haven't been great defensively. They've been in the middle of the pack, but I think Klay's defense itself has always been good. It didn't apply to this game against the Thunder. He had three steals, but one of the theories in general, I did kind of a deep dive last year on this whole idea of like, what's up with Klay not being on a defensive team. Right. And I remember Mike Brown, you know, Warrior assistant coach, he and Ron Adams are the defensive guru minds. He thinks that the fact that Klay Thompson isn't a steals guy, that hurts because his defensive impact isn't about statistics. It's about presence. And then, you know, how you quantify success, he's defending the opposing team's top players. And, you know, the game against the Thunder aside, where Westbrook wasn't getting there. So, like, a lot of the times they are getting there. So it's a matter of what is a successful defensive assignment. It's either they're shooting inefficiently from the field, or they're living with that specific player getting theirs so long as no one else does. But they really think that he's very good with, you know, not only just having the conditioning to score and defend in a full game, but he can defend multiple positions. Like, he can switch pretty well. And the thing about the Russell Westbrook defense specifically, like, I know you were poking fun at the whole idea of like leaving him open, which was a reality. Like, Russell Westbrook's an awful outside shooter, so play the numbers. Right. And, you know, I think you've made this point that Ron Adams was famously known for, of like the your best defense is no defense. Right. But I think Klay deserves credit. Like, it's not like he's just loafing.
No, it was
around
a conscious decision. Yeah, he could have gotten himself into position. Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, I was just making note that he didn't have to run as hard against Russell Westbrook, because a lot of times it was better for him to just lay out and let it happen.
Right. And with that, what's really fascinating when you see some of those clips, like when he's leaving Russ open, it's so he can either get a rebound or so he can be inside in case he dumps it off to a big guy and he can help. Or, you know, be in a close position to rotate to another perimeter player that can actually make a three or an outside or a mid-range jumper. But the other times where he was taking Russell seriously on defense, he made sure that he was not driving to the basket. He wasn't falling for his pump fakes. So all these things, like, it's hard. Not only is it hard to do because it's Russell Westbrook, but it's all these small nuances that only someone that really studies the scouting report and is fundamentally sound can do. And he makes it look so easy because it looks like he's just going through the motions, and then on the other end he's draining threes. But there's definitely an art to what he's doing, and it comes with a lot of preparation and a good upbringing through his basketball career, where he was taught the importance of being a two-way player.
Yeah, no question about that. There's a lot of similarities to Andre Iguodala in terms of just letting the smarts handle it, but also then having elite physical gifts to just dominate on the defensive end, though it's not painfully obvious in the way that a Gobert or even sometimes a Draymond Green comes across, to where it's just, wow, it's spellbinding. This is just good, honest, you know, union man's job, and really putting on the hard hat and bringing in the lunch pail and going to work. And when you have that kind of force at the point of attack on defense, it makes everybody's job behind him a little bit easier, or maybe a lot easier. We'll see. Mark, we got to get out of here. Anything you want to empty the notebook on before you head into what has to be the worst back-to-back of the year?
Well, to be honest, I was hoping to empty by just getting your take, because you have good takes. Takes don't have any borders, so it doesn't matter if you're in California right now, right?
True. It's true.
Getting to like a presumed West Finals, like I want to get your take. Like, what's the deal with the Nuggets and what's the deal with Houston?
The Nuggets are not a threat. And I have a very hard time believing that these young Nuggets are going to be in position to be in the Western Conference Finals. In fact, I might have to recalibrate my thoughts on them because I don't expect them to be there at all. And then, the Rockets, again, you have that one kind of smoke. That one kind of smoke can certainly win a couple of games. But if the Warriors come right, I would expect a very similar series to last year, which really should have been a five-game series. And the Warriors took their foot off the accelerator, coasted, and then had to come back and really turn it on in the second halves of Game 6 and 7. Andre Iguodala's absence from that series loomed large just because, again, when you have a guy like James Harden, you have a guy like Chris Paul, they want to live on the foul line. And as Jim Barnett, accurately and acutely stated, guys will miss field goal attempts, but they don't miss free throws. So just don't put them on the line and you can always beat the Houston Rockets. I think that the Warriors have eventually figured that out. It's only been, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of this just needing to be pounded in. But here we are. I think that the message has come across. I think that game on Wednesday really signaled that they get it. When they're locked in, that's the kind of focus that they can bring, where they're not putting Harden and they're not putting Paul on the line time and time again. And you're going to give up some alley-oops to Clint Capella, and you're going to give up some three-pointers to James Harden. And you just have to remain disciplined and understand that those guys can't do it all by themselves, and they're going to try. And the Warriors have more talent than them. So it's going to come out in your favor. Certainly, I would imagine 4 times out of 6, maybe we get to 4 times out of 7, but it will come out in your favor more often than not. So I don't know who it's going to be. I would not bet on the Nuggets. I'm not feeling great about the Rockets come a playoff series, to be totally honest. I think that if they get to the Western Conference Finals, it will be a slog for them, because it's hard for me to envision a circumstance where they can run anybody off the court with their slow pace. They're just going to be extremely beholden to the three-point shot, and particularly James Harden's three-point shot. So I can imagine them coming in off of a really tough-fought 6-game series and a 7-game series ahead of time. So I just don't know who it's going to be in the Western Conference Finals. In fact, it might be more the Warriors' second-round matchup against the Thunder or the Blazers, if those are the two teams that come out of the Warriors' side of the bracket. That might be a tougher matchup than whichever team they face in the Western Conference Finals. And then we can get into the East at another point when we get some clarity there, because that's where the real challenge comes.
Well, nothing else. We're always rooting for the stories, but for your sake, I'm also rooting for you to be able to get to the cities you want to. So
yeah, no, we're
sending out some vibes for an LA trip, a Portland trip, and a Denver trip for your
That's all I want. I'm 6'8" and 280 pounds. I do not need to be flying commercial cross country for a Western Conference second round series. I'll do it. I'll do it because I love the readers and I love doing my job. But damn it. That Central time zone crap really took it out of me last year. And by Cleveland, I was a corpse. So luckily, so were the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that worked out pretty well. Mark, go get some rest. You need to fuel up. I don't know what it is you do in a circumstance like this, but I'm feeling a little bit of fatigue just talking to you, because I know what's coming up for you over the next 2 days.
I thought you were going to say because I was bored you to death, but
no.
All right.
No, quite the opposite, my friend. Quite the opposite, my friend. Rest up. We'll talk soon. We'll talk after the road trip when you're back in the Bay.
All righty. Sounds good. And some plugs here. Mercury Easy Spay Times, 11 cents a day if you subscribe for 11 months. Let's see. We got the Warriors HQ podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, everywhere. I'm on Twitter, Mark_Medina, Dieter, D. Kurtenbach. And I think that's it.
That is it. Talk soon, buddy.
Talk soon.